There's lots and lots to say about short stories. I don't think it's something that falls in between two stools, as Larkin apparently claimed. I think it stands on both of the stools and towers above both of those forms. So you don't have to study the short story for very long before someone will tell you that Ernest Hemingway wrote the greatest short story, and they'll say that it was only 6 words long. Usually they say this with an air of mechanical awe. Not only did he write the greatest short story, but he did it in exactly 6 words. Six. The subtext to people telling you this is often that you should probably stop wasting your time and turn your attention to some other problem instead. Don't worry about the short story, they seem to be saying. The old man's done it already. The problem's been solved and fixed. These people are idiots. The story is terrible, and it's likely that Hemingway didn't even write it. Here it is. There's a story that Hemingway wrote this. I should say that for the tape, shouldn't I? The story is, for sale, baby shoes, never worn. There's a story that Hemingway wrote this in response to a bet, or to win a bet he'd instigated, or to settle an argument in a bar, or something. It seems fairly likely that he didn't, and I'm going to be giving you some links at the end of the talk, and one of those is a link to a discussion about whether or not it's true that he did write this story. It seems likely that he didn't, but people believe he did simply because it seems like a Hemingway thing to do, both the bet itself and the brevity of the story. And it's become a story which is used as a supposedly great example of compression and brevity and structure and pathos. There are numerous blogs based on people writing their own 6-word stories, and writing workshops will often whip this out as a starter exercise, which I know because I'm afraid I've done it myself. But this particular example is a terrible example of a very short story, and I'm going to spend some time telling you why. The trouble is, people with insufficiently exercised imaginations read the words never worn and realize that this implies some kind of tragic loss, a miscarriage or a stillbirth or the death of a very young infant or a failure to conceive at all, and they're struck by the sadness and pity and pathos of that, which is fair enough. A dead baby is a sad thing. But that's all it is. A dead baby is a sad thing. It's so enormously, painfully, obviously sad that there's no point in saying so. What is a reader supposed to do with that information? Where can they go with it? Some people had a baby, they lost the baby, they were engulfed by grief for the rest of their lives. It's not a story, it's a statement of fact. And further, it's a clumsy attempt to manipulate the reader by tugging at the string labelled deepest fear. It's the literary equivalent of one of those sad-eyed clown paintings which you used to be able to buy in corner shops and can now only find in ironic boutiques on the internet. Sad-eyed clown. The people who tell you that this is the greatest short story will, even if they concede your point about the heavy-handed pathos of the dead baby, wax lyrical about the structure. Look, they say, it has a classic three-act structure. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. To which the only proper response is, well, yeah, and so what? If the price of giving a story a beginning, middle, and end is that the end be as much of a dead end as this one, then I'd rather take my custom elsewhere. Having a tidy structure is one way of putting a story together, but it's only one of the very many options. And the trouble with the ending here is that it brings an end to the reader's involvement. I should also mention that actually the rhythm of the prose here is leaden-footed and deadening, and the sort of thing that someone who thinks they understand how Hemingway writes would write. But I'm going to come back to rhythm on another day. For now, I want to stick to exploring this idea of the dead end, if you'll excuse the pun. The reader's involvement ends with the end of the story. There was a baby, the baby died, everyone was sad. It's not an open-ended story. It's closed to the reader. Another way of putting this would be to use the terms writerly and readerly. These are probably terms that some of you are familiar with. They come from a Roland Barthes essay in the book Image, Music, Text. The idea being essentially, and I'm sure there's people here who know more about critical theory than me, but basically the idea is that a writerly text is one in which the reader has to do some of the work of making the story, bringing their own experiences and intuitions to bear on the text, making their own connections, providing their own interpretations. Whereas a readerly text, in Barthes' formula, is one where the narrative is smoothly described and the reader can just sit back and enjoy the ride. And this concept of the writerly text is central to my understanding of what makes for great literature. So I just want to spend a few moments thinking about what this might mean in practice. And I wanted to try, by way of an example, of moving this away from the readerly text it is at the moment, the closed text, moving it to something a bit more open and a bit more writerly. So here we've still got the heavy-handed pathos of Never Worn, but we've opened it out a little because there's a number of reasons why a wedding dress might never have been worn. Okay, so the bride might have died in a tragic choking incident on a hen night, or the groom might have fallen down the stairs on the morning of the wedding, or she might have been jilted on the eve of the wedding with the dress laid out ready. But there are lots of other possibilities. She might have just changed her mind. She might have been on the verge of being trapped into a loveless wedding by her scheming family, and maybe she's now driving down the highway in an open-topped car with her best friend by her side. She might have just not liked the dress. She might have finally found the courage to defy her mother and wear her own choice of dress as she strikes out on her life as an independent woman within an equal marriage partnership. There are, in short, a number of different possibilities. The story has become open. The reader is able to bring her or his own ideas to the text and to, this is the crucial bit, to take part in the writing. And we could work on the story further. We could try and soften the heavy-handedness of the never worn and change it to as new, which would add a further layer of ambiguity. It could mean that the dress was worn, but only briefly, tried on or worn for a morning before the wedding that didn't happen. The difficulty here is that second-hand wedding dresses are pretty much all as new, since they're only ever worn for a few hours. So perhaps we should stick to never worn, or perhaps a slightly less emphatic unworn, which gives us an extra word. And in fact, if we're worrying about word count, we could change for sale to offered, which you often see in classified ads. And this actually means that we've just edited Hemingway's so-called masterpiece by 50%, down to 3 words, since wedding dress is hyphenated and it counts as a single word. But if we're going to stick to the 6-word format, which apparently is a special kind of magic format, then we have an extra 3 words to play with. So we could use those words to embellish the ambiguity that we've already opened up. By adding sale or exchange, we're suggesting a story along the lines of a woman who's A, still alive, and B, intending to go ahead with some kind of wedding to someone at some point. So it complicates the possible storylines in the reader's mind. We could even come full circle and make the new version reference the original as some kind of searing critique of Hemingway's boorish sentimentality. I'm glad you like it. Or we could realise that through this whole process of playing around with the different possibilities, we've generated much more of a character and a background, and so we can write a properly developed story and leave the schoolroom gimmickry of the 6-word format behind.